Okay, so then welcome to the very last, it's only a very minor number of slides, I guess. I don't know whether it's even more than, so it's only very few slides. So the last time in the end, so yesterday in the end, we only, it's in some sense kind of a hack. So the question is, how do we implement multiple stacks? And so the stack consists of stack frames. So we simply consider it as we have this dynamic. So the FP old allows us to navigate to a stack frame deeper down in the stack. So that is fine. But there is and by that we kind of could link multiple stack frames. Or could merge multiple stack frames into a single stack. So one problem is then if we kind of pop a stack frame, this popping might occur in the middle of the stack. And that means either we reuse this and fill in another stack frame, but that might not be a good idea, or we just leave the hole, just remember that there is a hole, and as soon as neighboring stack frames get popped, the hole gets larger, and if it this bubble, if you like, protrudes to the upper end of the stack, then it really is freed. So that one could kind of do. There is only one problem, and that is, maybe I show that again, that the formal parameters kind of are the actual parameters are evaluated in the old stack frame, and they are pushed on the stack, and then there is a topmost element, and on top of that one puts the organizational cells, and then there is the frame pointer. Okay, so that is all fine, but then the if we kind of then the caller cannot allocate the stack frame for the callee, because the caller does not know what the callee will do and how much space it consumes. So therefore, the stack frame for every procedure call or function call must be allocated by the function itself. But that is kind of later, when the parameters have already been passed. So that now we could kind of clearly, we could copy the actual parameters from the caller to the callee. That would be a possibility, copying them over. But the function, in particular, if one has a variable number of parameters, does not know how many parameters are there. So it's not so easy to copy them. Therefore, one solution would be kind of to keep the parameters on the call side, and have only the locals in the stack frame of a function call. But that means then that the formals and actual parameters are accessed relative to the frame pointer, and the others relative to the stack pointer. And in particular, that means that we have to modify our addressing scheme for locals, because they are, well, we have seen examples where one can use, namely functional language, where we use the stack pointer successfully to access the locals. So that we could use the same idea also here. That would be one possibility. The other thing is, we could kind of we could pass the parameters in registers. So that would be that the argument there would be a scratch pad for the outside of the stack for the arguments, and on the real hardware this would be registers, but it could also be some other area of memory. So there's no reason why that should necessarily be why parameters should necessarily be passed in registers. Is only for efficiency reasons. You could also put it into a dedicated portion of memory, which is so heavily used that these its elements are always mirrored in the cache. And that would mean that access to these data would be equally efficient as if it were, or not equally, but almost equally as if they were in registers, because cache is typically not so much slower than registers. At least it's much faster than ordinary memory. And that by that one would bypass this problem that some data are there and some are there. We simply kind of have these argument registers in a separate area of memory. And then we could kind of pass these actual parameters into the new stack frame, if we like. And that we could even do things like that. If it is a leaf procedure, then we might not copy these argument registers into the stack frame, but only save them when there is another recursive call. Yeah, so that is kind of things what people do in real when they really compile on real hardware. Procedure calls, then they have these registers which they simply use, and they save space for the registers within the stack frame, but they not always kind of copy them into the onto the stack, but only do that if the space in the if the registers for some reason are used for different purposes. So using this idea, one could kind of move every information which is required for the procedure call into the stack frame for the procedure. Okay. Yeah. And there's only one thing which one has to kind of the question is what kind of organizational cells we need. Well, the two organizational cells are clear, namely the PC-old and the FP-old. The FP-old to get back to the stack frame of the caller, yes, but this FP-old gives us only a pointer to the topmost organizational cell of the caller. It does not give us the kind of the upper end of that stack frame. And that might also be required because that is the place where we have to readjust the stack pointer to in order to continue with local evaluation. So if we evaluate expressions or so, we need the top of stack of the caller. And that top of stack is inside. It's not the top of the global stack, but it's somewhere inside because there are other threads accessing the whole stack data structure, and so we are only confined to this particular region down there. And so we have to stay there. So that is kind of different to say that also. This is different to what we saw for Prolog. There it was also the top of, there were multiple stack frames kind of piling up on the stack. But there was only one thread, and if you needed local auxiliary memory, local stack, then you could do that always on the real top of stack. But here we would kind of do, every thread would kind of be confined to its own stack frame and therefore to its own part. And therefore we need to save the top of stack, of local stack, so to speak, of the caller as well. Therefore, three organizational cells, even if we don't have an EP. Okay. So, and that is kind of this intertwining of several stacks is not completely trivial to implement, it is nice in that respect, as there's no restriction how many threads are there, and you do not need to know in advance how deep the stacks will be for the individual threads. So in that sense, it's a great thing. But a little bit complicated, and there may be waste of space due to the holes in the stack. That is one thing, and there is perhaps another thing. You might have a congestion because if multiple threads want to kind of allocate a new stack frame, then you can only do it one after the other. Because at least this G, the global stack pointer on top of this global stack pointer, this is only one memory cell, and if multiple threads want to access it, you could have a congestion there if you have a multi-CPU hardware. Now, therefore, one could think of a hybrid solution which kind of combines the two ideas of having separate memory blocks for the separate threads and or this intertwining of stack frames. And so that what one could do is one gives native support for a fixed number of threads, say 32. And that means one allocates stack space for big blocks of memory for 32 threads. And so that would be the first thing. And if you, then it happens to be that more threads are generated than 32, then we reuse, then the kind of the workload of one of the threads is kind of increased by kind of, it has to simulate multiple threads. So this worker thread has to simulate several virtual threads, and that means that its stack is also kind of will become this in this intertwined fashion. Yeah, so that would be the idea. And the effect, this means that the first few threads, the implementation for a few threads would be extremely simple and efficient, because then there is just an ordinary stack and no particular memory management, so very easy. And for if you have many threads, then you many small threads, some with lots of stack consumption and others with less stack consumption, then you have this amortizing thing that you kind of put them onto the same stack. Yeah. So in that sense, you get, again, the best of several worlds. And that's it. And so it's a bit weird that, well, so what could, it's an abrupt finish. So we kind of dealt with that. And now that was the last thing what I had to show you. But it's also kind of nice to have as the last idea such an hybrid idea, because it is when you do code generation and compilers, you typically need a multitude of ideas and have to combine them. And it's not so that there's a single idea which you can use and that is that solves all problems. So, but you have to combine different ideas. And this is one example where one kind of combines a solution. Two solutions into one. Multi-threading, we had another place where we could use this, where we used multiple ideas. That was when we used the counting. This yielding. So when you simulate multiple threads and want to do it in a fair way, we could interrupt at particular places. This was this jumping back. At these places, we could kind of interrupt a thread and let another thread run. But then we said, oh, that happens too often. And then we additionally use a counter so that this happens only every 20. This yielding there takes place only every 20 or 100 iterations. And so again, one has two solutions, this counter and this static fixed interrupt, and the combination is probably the best idea. That is, so in that sense, this gives also a philosophical last and not too bad idea. So I, but that kind of concludes the lecture. I hope you enjoyed the lecture. At least I enjoy this lecture always very much, because it gives, at least in my taste, a nice overview over quite different programming languages, and one gets a very, in some sense, an in-depth understanding how these languages really work. So what really goes on when you want to execute these programs. And this kind of level of understanding one typically does not get when one gets a programming course on it or makes a few programming exercises. One still has typically only a vague understanding about the semantics of a program. And I guess even, I would say, the majority of students here, having learned Java for many years, have only a vague understanding what really goes on with Java. And I do not even dare to guess how much understanding the C++ programmers have about what happens when they execute their programs. Thank you very much. And are there questions?
We had this wait for threads, and then we had to do a dump before we lock, and then we do the unlock. In between that, we had this dump expression, and I don't understand why we
do. So what?
Then we had threads, and then we had the...
So you speak about the waiting.
Yeah.
This waiting thing here, mutual exclusion, this was not that. You speak about this wait.
Yeah.
So this particular slide.
Yeah.
Aha, please. Dup. Aha. Because. So now when we did the waiting, then the top of stack has been popped. And the top of stack is this E0. And the E0 is the reference to the condition variable. So this is gone after the wait. So on top of the stack is a reference to the mutex. Yes? And for the mutex, we want to do two operations. First an unlock, and then a lock. Okay? So if the unlock will eat up the reference to the mutex on top of the stack. This is bad. Then there's no reference left for doing the locking. So since these two operations are needed, we first duplicate the reference, and then we have two references to be consumed. First by the unlock, and then by the lock. Yeah? Any more questions? If not, then thank you for your attention, and we may kind of walk over there and have some drink, non-alcoholic drink.